I was all alone. At times of trouble and pain, I used to think there was no one else who felt the cold and rain. Then I woke up to humanity.
Good morning. Good morning, listeners. This is John Neeters, here as your host of The Balancing Point, and happy to be here with you. Again, this is a special edition of The Balancing Point here on Monday morning. KEST was kind enough to ask me to do a few extra Monday shows, and so I've chosen to make these shows rather topical. We did one on pain and pain management a couple of weeks ago, which I got some really great feedback. And then we did a couple of other topics, talked about the E. coli epidemic, what to do about that, how to prevent it, what's really occurring there, and looked at some other issues. Today, I want to look at one of my favorite topics, and a topic that's getting a lot of publicity lately, a lot of air, and it's one that everybody, you know, on these topical programs, I'm looking for things that I think everyone would be concerned with. So pain. Everybody has pain at some time in their life, except a very, very, very few people who don't feel pain. But that's very, very rare. Today's topic is in that same category as something that we all need to be concerned with, something that will touch our lives for sure, either personally, directly, or through other people that we know. And that topic is brain health and dementia. Fortunately, there are a lot of people doing a lot of great work in this field. We even have professional sports. There were two members of the San Francisco 49ers famed, quote, million-dollar backfield passed away in the last few weeks, and their brains were donated to an organization that is studying sports injuries and the relationship to brain injuries, and so particularly concussions. And it's really very dramatic. When I was in high school playing sports, I received low-grade concussions on several occasions. At that time, we didn't call it a concussion. We called it getting your bell rung. So you'd come to the sidelines. They'd wave some smelling salts under your nose and say, all right, you know, are you going to go get them or are you going to sit over here and cry type of thing? It was, you know, that was the mentality at that point. And so, of course, you'd go back out on the field. And I played several games with a fracture in my arm that was non-displaced, so the trainer didn't feel that it was fractured, so that hurt like heck. Played one season with a broken foot that was misdiagnosed, and that was really the way it was. There was very little medical attention available for athletes at that level. Fortunately now, there's been enough publicity about the horrific consequences of concussions, and that those concussions you can see changes in the brain that don't go away. So there's a lot of publicity about that. We have Dr. Amen and several other people doing some great work on brain health. I caught the end of Seeing Beyond just before this show and heard the discussion about the importance of exercise for brain health, and boy, I couldn't agree more with that. So I'm going to talk about dementia for about 45 minutes, not just dementia, but how to keep your brain healthy, really look at the overview of that, and this will be a little different than what you're used to because I'm looking at it from a traditional Chinese medical or classical Chinese medical perspective, so it'll be a little different than what you might have heard somewhere else. Before I do that, I want to remind you that the purpose of this show, of my doing this, is education. It is to create what Bucky Fuller called a critical mass, this critical mass. He said if 10% of a population starts to shift, it can pull the rest of the population with it. We are seeing such a dramatic escalation in healthcare costs, it is almost unbelievable. And trust me, it's going to get much, much worse. There was an article in the Chronicle this morning about all of these people that will now be covered with healthcare, which I think is wonderful. None of them, however, will be paying for that health care. None of the people that were mentioned in these articles are going to be substantially paying for their health care, which means it will be passed on to other portions of the population. Now, whether you think that's a good idea or a bad idea, that's a matter of opinion. However, that it will raise health care costs is really not a matter of opinion. That's it. There's no way around that. So the point of this show is to help you educate yourselves and those around you to the incredibly wide range of possibilities in personal health care. And those have been widely ignored and poo-pooed in spite of massive scientific evidence for their efficacy. I had got a wonderful phone call yesterday. Yesterday was Sunday. I was at home, and an old friend called, and I had seen her husband a couple years ago, I guess a year and a half, 2 years ago, and he'd come into my office, and I immediately had him pee in a cup, did a dipstick on him, and from my examination said he needs to go to the emergency room. He's got severe liver problems and some other issues that are going on, but the one I was most concerned about was the liver. So he did go to the ER. They did admit him. They refused to look at any of the tests that I had done and refused to do a urinalysis on him. It was very bizarre. And they said it was because of, you know, his alcoholism was what was causing the problem. Well, certainly alcohol was an issue. However, when I did my physical exam, it was obvious that his liver was huge. He had this massively oversized liver. They didn't check his liver when he was in the hospital, really, and some of the kidney issues that I had sent in. And finally, after many discussions with his wife, I said, don't leave the hospital until you get an exam of his liver, an MRI or an ultrasound, something. They did and found he had a massively oversized liver with lots of fatty infiltrates, primarily maybe a little cirrhotic, but mostly lots of fatty tissues. And the doctor said, there's absolutely nothing you can do about this. There's nothing you can do. You know, he's going to have to live with this, and hopefully it doesn't all become cirrhotic, meaning it dies and you get these very hard tissues in there. And I said, yeah, don't worry about it. We'll get rid of it. So I put him on a very intense supplement regimen, a few herbs, but really a lot of supplements, as I knew I wouldn't be seeing him a lot. Got the call yesterday. He went in for his MRI. His liver is perfect, perfect. No fatty deposits to speak of. It's normal size. And this is after his doctor said it was impossible. Now, I know it's not impossible because I've had many patients with fatty liver. And it's not because I'm a liver specialist. It really, Chinese medicine deals with this all the time. And it is something that is fixable. And if it's not fixed, it can go on to become, you know, a very dangerous condition. So the point of that is that this program is really about helping you educate yourself to other possibilities in healthcare. If I had $100 for every time I've had someone say that their doctor said something was impossible and then we fix it, I actually could retire someday. It's what you're dealing with here. It's like going to, and please take this the right way, it's like going to an Aboriginal culture that's never been in contact, say, with the larger culture, and telling them that you arrived in Australia on an airplane, and they are going to look at you like you're totally nuts because they know that's impossible. It is absolutely impossible to fly. So you get a council with the great wise leaders of the clan, and all of them get together, and they all agree 100% that you're crazy because nobody can fly. That's really what we're dealing with here with a lot of these issues. Because the paradigm is internalized. So it's a group paradigm, a group consciousness that says our way is the only way. Anything outside of that can't even be seen. It's not even that it's really disregarded, you know, consciously. It actually cannot be perceived and seen because the enculturation is so powerful and so strong. I have many patients who have been told they had to have surgeries to take their intestines out any number of things, and that it was, quote, impossible, end quote, to achieve freedom from that problem without the Western medical treatments, either pharmaceutically or surgically. And, I should keep a list, I guess, but it's huge, huge list. And it's not about me. It's about opening up to to different modalities of healing, my paradigm, my window into healing is classical Chinese medicine. I studied a lot of naturopathic ideas before I went to acupuncture school and did a lot of Western herbology and treatments of a more naturopathic orientation. However, my main orientation is through the lens of classical Chinese medicine, and I know these things are fixable. We do it all the time in our clinics. It's not just me, it's as a whole. So one of the questions that I get is about, I'm going to get into dementia in a minute. One of the questions that I get often is, what is the right formula for me? I'll get this, I have one long email I'm sending off today, a listener who has migraines and wants to know what she should do. And the answer is very simple. I don't know. There are dozens of naturopathic remedies, ways to feed into that hormonally, hormonal imbalances, which might need to be, it might be so severe that someone needs to take some hormones. It could be treated with a lot of Western herbs. It's something that might be, we have dozens and dozens of different approaches for migraine, from acupuncture to food combining to herbal medicine to exercise to meditation techniques. So there's no one way. Not only is there not only one way, at every phase of a condition, we have different treatments. A case in point, a little boy last week, and he had a high fever. It was pushing 104. So we gave him a formula called Bai Hu Tong. Bai Hu Tong is basically Chinese acetaminophen without the side effects. So again, we know that acetaminophen is the number one cause of acute care liver failure, raises asthma rates in children that age dramatically. So we have an herbal formula that brings that fever down without having to resort for very dangerous pharmaceuticals. At the same time, he was starting to develop a slight sore throat, so he was put on a formula. Now, I'm going to give the general names. It's always very specific to the patient, but a formula called Yin Chao Plus, which treats sore throat and what in the West we would typically call a viral infection. And that kept the sore throat down, kept the glandular involvement. He developed no significant glandular involvement. Fever came down. A couple days later, fever spiked, and it had started moving to the lungs. So we used a formula called Song Ju Yin, a close relative to Yin Chao, actually, I believe, invented by the same practitioner probably 300 years ago, and that then treated the lung aspect of it. Again, typically probably used more for antiviral conditions. However, it's different than the Yin Chao. And then because the fever was very stubborn, went back up over 103, we did acupuncture within minutes of doing the acupuncture. And the reason we didn't do acupuncture before is that the points used for that can be a little painful for an 8 or 9 year old. So we did the points within minutes, the fever started to drop. We did a little more acupuncture and a little medical qigong. The fever dropped dramatically and within about 12 hours was completely gone. Now at each phase of that illness, and in children, of course, these can change very dramatically and very quickly, at each phase it calls for a different formula. So I use three formulas, each with variations. Could have used four easily for the different stages. And now, by the way, there is a fourth formula to clear the phlegm out. So there is no perfect formula for treating all conditions. There is a perfect formula for treating the specific condition that presents at that moment, and there's a specific acupuncture prescription for treating what presents at that moment. However, the next day it might be a different formula and a different treatment. So it makes self-treatment rather difficult, actually. There are some general things that can be done with tonifying herbs that are generally safe for almost anybody. When it comes to pathologies and getting rid of a pathogen, a virus, a bacteria, a yeast, it's really good to just go in, drop in, and see a practitioner so they can set up a plan of action for you. Okay, I'm going to talk about dementia and brain health. And obviously, this is pretty darn significant. Now, dementia is a general term indicating a significant loss of intellectual abilities, okay, things like memory capacity. And it's severe enough to interfere with social or occupational functioning. And that's then put in this larger category of dementia. One of the major forms of dementia is Alzheimer's disease, which is a very particular illness that involves plaquing in the brain. Now, there are many, many other causes of dementia. Some of them include cortical dementia. That's where the brain's cortex, that outer layer, and when that gets damaged, it causes problems with memory, language, thinking, social behavior. Then there's subcortical dementia. Now, I'm talking about this from a Western standpoint first. I will get to the Chinese in a few minutes. And in subcortical dementia, it's below the cortex, and it causes changes often in emotions and movement as well as memory. And sometimes you can do some general diagnostics just by seeing how the symptoms show up. There is progressive dementia, where the cognitive abilities continue to decline over time until really there's not much left at all. Often, Alzheimer's is called primary dementia. It's due to this particular cause. And then secondary dementia, which would be due to an injury or a physical disease of some form. Now, in Chinese medicine, we have many, many herbs to treat dementia. And I'm going to mention a couple of the herbs. Later on, I'll get into formulas and et cetera. But I'm just going to get these out quickly. Now, you probably won't have time to write down all this information, and that's fine. You can simply go to thebalancingpoint.net, thebalancingpoint.net, and replay the show. And it will be up in a few days, and you'll be able to get all this information. Take your time going through it. Today, I'm going to hit the high points. So some herbs that are used often for dementia and dementia prevention, we have things like Renshen or ginseng. What's called Renshen is the Panax ginseng. And this is to supplement qi, generate fluids. It's really good for heart qi, lung qi, and spleen qi. And it helps calm the spirit as long as the dosage is correct. You don't want to overdo Renshen. It's something that needs to be done a little bit over a day, over a long term. It's much more effective. Other herbs, shichangpu or ikoris is one of my favorites, and I use that a lot when people have to do things like study for the bar exam where they need to have their energy up, but they need to be calm. It opens the orifices, we say in Chinese medicine, meaning it unblocks that phlegmy, damp cloudiness in the head. It's really good for that. So it transforms that damp phlegm that we say mists or clouds or blocks the orifices of the heart mind and allows clear thinking. Others are Danshen, which is that's Danshen, which is one of my favorite herbs. Danshen, they say you can use these six herbs or you can use Danshen when we're talking about supplementing the blood. And Danshen has been shown to be very, very effective at stopping leakage through the vessels that can lead to a variety of arterial problems, and it really strongly affects the microcirculation. So it's a blood-activating and blood-nourishing herb. When I was in school, often the senior acupuncturists, basically everybody over 50, would walk around sipping Danshen tea. It's a root. You just throw it in boiling water and then drink it all day long. So it's very effective. Chuanxiong, or Szechuan lavage root, is probably the most commonly used blood mover or blood activating herb. And what's really significant about Chuanxiong, I use it, I believe, in all of my dementia and brain formulas. I can't think of any that I don't use it in. It is one of the few herbs that crosses the blood-brain barrier effectively to move blood in the brain. It's often used for headache remedies. It's in migraine remedies. It's very effective, though, for carrying and moving this blood in the brain. So chuanzhong. Others are yuanzhi, Y-U-A-N-Z-H-I, or polygala, one of the polygala plants at least, or many of them that we use. And that calms the spirit while it opens the orifices. This is really effective for people who actually have dementia, particularly, well, actually at any stage of dementia, because it will calm them down. It slows down the mind and lets them relax, which really, one of the problems you'll find people talking about if they work in a congregate care facility with a lot of dementia patients is they just pace constantly. Many of them are not lethargic. They're just constantly moving. It makes it very hard on the staff. So the yuanzhi allows them to relax a little bit and take it easy while it opens the orifices. Another one that's rather similar is hehuanpi, H-E-H-U-A-N-P-I. That's a mimosa tree bark. And that also calms the spirit. I use it with yuanzhi a lot and shichangpu. And it also activates the blood. It also reduces swelling, which may be one of its reasons for effectiveness in the brain also. A couple of others that one that has not been used as much in Chinese medicine historically for this problem, but is now used a lot, is rhodiola, rhodiola rosea. And rhodiola is, I believe, the only herb that was taken into space by the Russian cosmonauts. They did lots of rhodiola. It's called poor man's ginseng. It's very inexpensive. And so I'm a big fan of rhodiola. Also huangqi, astragalus. Huangqi brings the energy up in the body. It's the best known herb for kind of pulling everything up. We use it for everything from uterine prolapse to low energy. And it really pulls things up and to the exterior. So it's a very effective herb for supplementing the wei qi, this protective energy around the body. We know now from Western medical science that it's very powerful for stimulating microcirculation, this getting blood moving through the vessels, these tiny, tiny vessels, which of course makes it good in diabetic conditions, but also for dementia. Now, I wanted to throw that a few Chinese herbs in at the beginning because I know some of you won't be able to listen for the whole hour. I'm now going to shift back a little bit to the Western biomedicine. And this is one of the hottest areas of interest, tons of information. However, there are no truly effective medical interventions. So nothing works well in Western medicine to treat these conditions. Now, prevention, what's needed for prevention, is very, very well known. It comes down to lifestyle, includes diet, stress reduction, eating properly, supplements, and that's really where we need to look. Now, symptoms of dementia, some of the latest research is rather alarming. You know, the people would say, gosh, is it just aging or should I be worried? Well, you should be concerned. Not worried, but you should be concerned. Even senior moments, you know, what was I doing? Oh, where are my keys? Indicate a 50% likelihood of developing dementia. So that's really pretty scary because most people I know experience those senior moments. So 50% likelihood of developing dementia. So don't worry because that increases your risk, but be concerned and start taking action right away. Often overlooked symptoms are things like nominative memory loss. You can't remember nouns. You look at an object and it's like, what is that thing? I use it to stick paper together. It's a stapler. So that type of memory loss is very significant. The one I find that is the real scary one is unwillingness to engage in difficult mental calculation. So let's say you used to read the chess column or the bridge column every day, and now it's just too much work. You're not willing to do it, or you're not willing to play bridge anymore, or not willing to play chess anymore because it's just too hard. That's scary. When you find that happening, get to someone right away and get some help because those are very, very big danger signs. One of the things you'll see is bridging, like I was talking about with the stapler. It's like, it's the thing that we use to stick paper together. It sits on my desk. So you start working around it rather than coming up with the precise and concise way of speaking about it. It's a stapler. So let's talk about some of the causes of dementia. Stress is huge. We know that people in the top one-sixth of a stress inventory, a psychological inventory, have about three times greater risk of developing diabetes in the following year. And we know that diabetes, well, many doctors now call Alzheimer's disease type 3 diabetes because it is so closely implicated with sugar problems and insulin resistance problems. So lack of sleep, again, same thing. People that sleep 6.5 hours or less of uninterrupted sleep also have about 2.5 to 3.5 times the risk of developing diabetes in the following year, which, of course, means that they have a higher Alzheimer's risk. Emotional imbalance, this is a big cause. We know about diet. Just looking at this relationship of diabetes to Alzheimer's can help you eat properly for your brain. Anything that's good for diabetes reduction, anything that's good for weight loss, pretty much as long as it's not too radical, is good, probably going to be good for the brain. If we soak the brain in sugar, it's going to be a real problem. Chemicals and metal toxicity, aluminum is found in many plaques in the brain, Alzheimer's type plaques. That's been known for a long time. We also know that aluminum has been used as an adjuvant in many, many, many vaccines. It is still used in some vaccines as an adjuvant. And again, an adjuvant is something that stimulates the immune system so that you need less of the active substance that you're using to create the vaccination. So you need less of the influenza virus if you add aluminum, and aluminum's cheaper. So they use adjuvants. Well, those adjuvants can be deadly. Dr. Fudenberg, Fudenberg's done some many, many very, very good studies on a variety of these brain issues looking at methylation pathways in the brain in autistic children, et cetera. Some very, very good work. If you have five years of flu shots, it increases your dementia risk by 10 times. Now, don't quote me on that number, but I think it was 10 times increase. Probably what we're looking at there is this massive inflammation that's caused by the aluminum, the adjuvant, maybe the flu inoculation also causing a problem. I don't know what the reason is there, but it's certainly something. And then also the aluminum getting into the bloodstream and perhaps helping form those plaques, those amyloid plaques in the brain. Mercury is also very, very toxic to the brain. The biggest criminal there, I would say, are mercury amalgam fillings. You know, there are still doctors, still dentists putting those mercury amalgams in. They've been shown. I would highly recommend, if you don't believe this one, go to Joseph Mercola's website, mercola.com, look up mercury fillings, and watch the video of the off-gassing from a filling that has mercury in it, and it will scare the bejesus out of you. The mercury gets released as a vapor. The 49ers knew about this. Many of them went crazy. The term was mad as a hatter, you know, because the mercury was used in that industry. It was used in gold to help remove the gold from the ore, and lots of the 49ers lost their lives or their sanity to mercury, through mercury vapors. And the mercury vapors released in your mouth are the worst place because they're right there close to the brain. So this is a big problem. Drugs, illegal. You know, one of the things about illegal drugs, it's very fascinating if you look at it, almost every illegal drug started as a legal drug. They were, you know, opium was a legal drug. Heroin was a legal drug. Morphine was a legal drug to help get people off the other drugs. Cocaine was a legal drug for many, many years. Most of these illegal drugs were legal. They were brought in as legal drugs, ecstasy, lysergic acid, diethylamide, LSD. So that the fact that it's legal certainly doesn't mean it's safe, and we know that far more people die of, it's about 10 to 1 typically, more people die of legal drugs, prescription drugs, than die of illegal drugs per year. But again, illegal drugs, You know, if you've ever seen a picture of a brain after someone's been on meth, it's like it's moth-eaten practically. But legal drugs are still drugs, and they are, many of them specifically are linked with increased Alzheimer's risk. And then lifestyle, lack of exercise. Smoking is the single worst thing that you can do for your brain. So we're looking at these things. So, again, stress. The body doesn't do a great job sometimes of differentiating between actual activities that are occurring around you and activities that are in your imagination. So post-traumatic stress disorder, people are reliving those memories over and over again and causes them to get more and more pronounced in the system. Anyone who's had heart failure, they have an 80% increased risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. People with low blood pressure, you know, we look at high blood pressure as being a problem for dementia, but people with low blood pressure have a brain that is 2 years smaller. It is shrunk by an average of 2 years compared to other age-grouped people. So that's a big drop. So big, big, big issues. Depression. Depression is a major predictor of dementia. So anyone suffering from depression has a much greater chance, and independent of all other variables, of developing depression. Depression, by the way, is also a major factor for cardiovascular disease, and we know that dementia and cardiovascular disease go hand in hand. So shouldn't be any mystery. Thyroid disorders often show up as depression or have the symptom of depression. Thyroid disorders can be predictive of dementia. Grief, by the way, is a major predictor of dementia. When member of a couple loses their spouse, it's a big, big predictor of dementia. Now, I talked a little bit about sleep. Sleep apnea is an independent predictor of dementia. So people with sleep apnea that's not corrected have much higher rates of dementia. Sleeping less than 6.5 hours, I mentioned, actually that number is 240% more likely to develop metabolic disorders. By the way, napping can reduce heart attacks in men by 50%. Men that nap regularly have 50% fewer heart attacks. I would suspect, although I have not seen any science for it, but there's a logical step there, that if it's reducing heart attacks, it will likely lower dementia risk. I just don't have proof yet. Lack of exercise at any age is highly predictive of diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, and dementia. So it's never too late to start. However, even if you exercised heavily in your 30s, or moderately actually in your 30s, you will have a slightly lower dementia risk. 40s, same thing. The key is to exercise now. And increasing exercise at any age lowers the risk for all of those. It means you're much more likely to live a healthy life if you get some exercise. I mentioned smoking is the single worst habit for your health in all ways, dementia included. There's about an 80% increase in risk for Alzheimer's disease in smokers. It changes blood flow. It lowers immunity, lowers oxygenation within seconds of starting to smoke, because it causes really intense, severe restriction of blood flow in the capillaries and blood flow in the brain, and you'll see a severe shrinkage of brain mass. You don't want to lose your brain. Believe me, that's just the last thing you want to lose. Now, other habits for dementia, alcohol is always bad for the brain. We've had a lot of research showing that it's very good for the heart, statistically, moderate drinking, and good for some other things. However, it's always a little bad for the brain, so you kind of have to balance those out and see which you want to do. Now, moderate drinkers actually live longer by they're quite significantly less likely, about 20% less likely to die per year than people who don't drink at all, but they have a little bit worse brains, right? Because alcohol causes dehydration in the entire body and a reduction in brain size. Other causes of dementia, I really don't like coffee for the brain. I think it's great for a lot of people, but if you're a slow metabolizer, it can be a problem. Coffee's good for the liver, but not so good for the heart and brain. Stimulants, in terms of illegal drugs, methamphetamine is certainly the worst. It's like Swiss cheese when you see a brain. But lower power stimulants, diet pills, ecstasy, cocaine, also cause brain damage. On the other hand, something that was kind of interesting, and I'm not advocating or not advocating anything, I'm just giving some information. Marijuana, there was some studies that showed that it actually was better than Aricept or Cognex, the two expensive drugs that are used to treat dementia. It actually seemed to work a little bit better at blocking the amyloid plaques. So again, some pluses and some minuses. Now, the anticholinergics I'm going on to legal drugs now, had a massive, massive increase in Alzheimer's degrees risk. I mean, really, really much higher. Also, things like Risperdal, Thorazine, Stelazine had dramatically, any of those antipsychotics had a dramatically higher risk. The H2 agonists in America caused about a 250% increase in one study that I saw. Now, also, I worry a lot about statins for statin drugs, which are given out, you know, all over the place now, almost like candy to patients. If you are concerned about your brain at all, and you've been, you know, you're on statins, or you've been told to go on statins, that's something you need to consider and talk with your doctor. But I would recommend that you read the book Thief of Memory by Dr. Duane Graveline. Now, Graveline is a flight surgeon. He was an astronaut, so he's a pretty bright guy. And he said when he went on statins, he developed transglobal amnesia. He essentially lost his mind. And so he started then doing lots and lots of research on statins and came up with some really pretty scary things. So if you're going to be doing statins, that's fine. But I would recommend that you read Dr. Graveline's book so that you can have yourself and, even more importantly, the people around you, because you may not notice, watch out for some of the side effects that can show up, including forgetting who you are, which is what happened to him. There was a 12-year study done a while back on NSAIDs, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, and I believe the risk there was about 60 to 65% more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease on NSAIDs. And that's really significant because these studies, several of them were done to prove that nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories were good for your brain, the idea being it will lower inflammation, so it should be good for the brain. Well, the actual information didn't come out that way. It showed that there was a potential link to increase. Now, this was tenuous. It was not very good research, so I wouldn't stand on that research, but it certainly didn't show what they were looking to prove, which is that it was good for it. So let's talk a little bit about testing for dementia. If you are not sleeping well, you need to get a sleep apnea test. Sleep apnea is a dramatic, dramatic problem in terms of increases in diabetes risk, cardiovascular risk, heart attacks, stroke, Alzheimer's disease. It's very, very, very dramatic because you're cutting off oxygenation to the brain. So that's probably number one. Then you can do an electroencephalogram, which will test. You find very, very tiny shifts starting to occur in the electroencephalogram. However, what is shown to be even more effective than the electroencephalogram is there's a smell test. You just smell about 40 different substances to see if you can identify them properly. And that test is actually more predictive and more accurate at preventing or at projecting out as possible dementia risk than the electroencephalogram, which I thought was kind of interesting. Another thing you can do is do genetic testing to see if you carry the APOE4 gene, and that's really significant. I highly recommend that. If the APOE4 is the biggest thing that we can test for in terms of predicting potential Alzheimer's disease. It's really the big gene. There are lots of others, but it's the biggie. If parents had Alzheimer's, there's a much higher risk of developing it, and if there's APOE4 and your parents had Alzheimer's, get help right away. Now, there are several really, really, really simple things that can be done to lower dementia risk in people with the APOE4 gene. Very well proven in Canadian studies, such studies at UCLA, and I'll get to those in a few minutes. You can have angiographic studies to see what your blood flow is, assuming that if the blood flow is bad to the peripheral arterial system, it's also liable to be diminished in the brain. And then we have all the inflammatory markers and the labs that you can do to look at balance in the body and look at potential inflammatory problems which increase brain problems. We know that high homocysteine levels, for example, are implicated in Alzheimer's, about a 200% increase, the number that I've seen. And homocysteine, again, is pretty easy to get down. Thyroid panels, C-reactive protein levels to see if the arteries are inflamed, and you'd want high sensitivity, probably C-reactive protein level there. Vitamin D levels, again, vitamin D, high vitamin D levels have been shown, people with high vitamin D levels have less dementia risk. And then GSE problem, glycosylated end products. So this is a hemoglobin A1C test, hemoglobin A1C, to see if your red blood cells are getting coated with caramel. So it's almost like having caramel apples rather than bright, shiny red apples. The red blood cells get coated with this. It's kind of like cooked sugar from having too much sugar in your blood, and it's the way you would caramelize sugar. You kind of heat it up. And so this is a test that directly measures how much of that end product is getting deposited on your red blood cells and making them sticky. Also, you'd want a uric acid test. Uric acid is a much better predictor of potential cardiovascular disease than, for example, a statin test. From a Chinese medical standpoint, here we go. Lots of things to look for. The number one problem in aging, as Yan Dexin has really turned the Chinese medical establishment around on this, that's not something that happens easily. Again, in Western medicine, things change constantly. In Chinese medicine, they change very, very slowly because we're looking at a completely different paradigm of diagnosis and treatment. But he has changed the thinking from what used to be really looking at aging and dementia as really being a kidney deficiency problem. He said, well, of course, kidney deficiency is an issue here, but it's not the primary problem. The direct primary problem is blood stasis. Now, that's very consistent with what we would find from a Western biomedical standpoint, where we have static blood, or blood that's sticky, glycosylated end products, or the vessels get damaged, and that's what leads to a lot of the problems. So it's very, very consistent with Western medical thought on this. So we would look at blood stasis, certainly. We check the tongue, feel the pulse, and then we look at a lot of body markers for blood stasis. It can be something as simple as little red dots, the little cherry hemangiomas. It could be complexion issues, kind of a sooty complexion, dark under the eyes, things like that, or varicose veins. Certainly would be an indicator that the blood flow isn't working very well. So those are blood stasis. We look for damp stagnation, again, the tongue and the pulse, the affect, the way people react, and other body markers, and phlegm obstruction, phlegm being sort of cooked dampness. So we look at signs and symptoms of that. And, of course, the kidney deficiency, if that's there, that shows up very clearly and dramatically in the pulse. And we look at signs and symptoms. And certainly the kidney deficiency is a plays a major role. That's really hormonal deficiencies would be one way to look at it, although it's a much broader category than that. So as the sex hormones, testosterone, progesterone, estrogen, go down, and then the precursors to those, the things that are deeper level, more like Jing issues, like DHEA levels, as those start to go down, we have a real problem, but also things that in the West would be associated with adrenal exhaustion or adrenal fatigue, those are also issues of the kidney system. So those all need to be treated. Going back to what I was speaking about a few minutes ago, high stress damages the kidney system. Lack of sleep damages the kidney system. So you can see where this all really fits. And by the way, the Chinese had it nailed a long, long time ago. My hero Li Dongyan in 1250 laid out all of the symptoms and signs and progression of metabolic syndrome X. So 750 years ago, he nailed it. And thank goodness, he gave us ways to treat it that were very, very clear. So prevention of dementia. Oh, by the way, so qi and blood deficiency also, if you don't have enough blood, then you're going to have blood stasis, and also you're not going to nourish the brain. And if you have qi deficiency, you have significant low blood pressure also, so you're not going to get the qi is not going to carry the blood where it needs to go, in this case being the brain. And those are things that we look for, again, with tongue and pulse, even with blood pressure readings. Now, prevention of dementia, relaxation and de-stressing. You must. In our culture, everybody is overstressed. So if you don't think you're overstressed, it just means you're marginally or highly overstressed. If you feel overstressed, it means you're grossly off the charts, probably. You really need to make sure that you're handling your sleep. If you are not sleeping well, go to a naturopath, go to an acupuncturist, go to someone who deals with sleep issues naturally and fix it. I have people that come in who haven't slept well their entire lives. In fact, I had a woman the other day, and she came in perky and bright and a big smile on her face, and for the first time in decades, she's sleeping like a baby. And not by coincidence, all of her other symptoms are getting better. Everything else is improving now because she's sleeping well. Diet, you know, people put a little too much attention into weight loss, I believe, in our culture, and not enough attention into their eating properly for their health. I'm not going to go into a lot of diet today because I think you're all pretty aware of what needs to be done. You need lots of vegetables, a lot of vegetables, green vegetables, get them into you, red, orange, yellow vegetables, some fruit. You don't want to go overboard on the fruit, but you do need especially dark berries and orange-colored fruit for the potassium level, things like cantaloupe, etc., and apples, which it's been proven that literally an apple a day does keep the doctor away. People who have an apple a day have far fewer hospital and doctor visits. It's a real cheap remedy. Rather than spending an extra $1,000 to get your deductible down, go buy an apple every day, and you'll be way better off. Get a high-deductible plan, save that $1,000 a month, and eat an apple. So physical exercise, critical, critical, critical. Anything you do to get your blood moving is great. You want to do moderate amounts of physical exercise. If you have blood sugar problems, it is critical that you do some form of interval training and or muscular training, weight training, things like that, because that can help lower the insulin resistance in the tissues. Mental exercises. I'm not going to go into that a lot. We have Posit Science and Drs. Amon's work and lots of really, really good programs out there now that you can buy for your home computer that force your brain to new and higher levels of activity. And that's, we've known that for since the study done on nuns many years ago, that that's one of the biggies. You really, really, really need to continually stimulate the brain. What that does is even if you're developing amyloid plaques, and this has been well proven, if you keep stimulating the brain, you'll develop new nerves. So you'll go around those roadblocks. So it's really, really critical to get that mental exercise. Then herbal medicine. Chinese herbal medicines are brilliant, brilliant, brilliant for dealing with these problems. We deal with them all the time. And then acupuncture. There are, I posted a year and a half, 2 years ago, four different studies for dealing with frontal lobe problems, dementia problems, showing significant increases in brain size and improvement in cognitive capacity from doing acupuncture. And it's always nice if we know what the underlying Western biomedical problem is, but even if we don't, acupuncture is very effective at treating the brain and changing the underlying conditions. One of my teachers, Zhao Shunfa, was a biomedical, Western-trained MD neurologist who was hanging out and with some acupuncturists and noticed that stimulating the areas of the scalp directly over certain areas of the brain, which he knew from his neurology, caused tremendous changes in the brain itself. So he mapped all this out and over a very long period of time proved it to the satisfaction of the Chinese government, and that is now taught as part of the training for an acupuncturist in the U.S. And I studied with Zhao Shunfa, and he did amazing things with this ability to stimulate the brain. So very, very effective. So if you're going to relax and de-stress, you've got yoga, you've got tai chi. Yoga increases GABA levels, so it relaxes the brain. So do tai chi, so does qigong, napping, mental exercises. One of the things that's been shown to be exceedingly, exceedingly helpful are forgiveness and thankfulness exercise. Do them every day. There's a term, which I'll probably mess up, but it's a Japanese term called ikigai, and it means basically a joy and sense of well-being from being alive. So no particular issue, just a sense of joy and well-being from being alive. And people with ikigai were 50% less likely to die in the following year. That is incredible. You want to extend your life? You want to be healthy, you want to be happy, you want to be free of dementia, practice forgiveness and thankfulness exercises about 5 times a day. Just say, what am I really thankful for now, and what do I want to forgive? Now, it may be forgiveness of something that you've done, something in your life, your incapacity to get something done. Forgive yourself. By the way, the guilt never helps you get it done. It's just helps further the excuse of not getting it done. So practice these exercises every day. There was a study done at the University of Kentucky and looking at meditation and how it significantly improved immune health and lowered dementia risk. So, again, dieting. I want to mention one more thing on dieting. We have so many studies now. We have studies of the Maasai people, the Eskimos, Japanese cultures, Okinawan, studies of specific Crete, people from the island of Crete, Greek cultures, French. They all eat very high fat, very low or moderate carbohydrate diets. They eat really, really, really good hearty fats. So what you want to do is eat organic, eat free-range, hormone-free meat, if you're going to eat meat, wild, low-mercury fish, cook your own food. Don't even think about touching tap water. You've got to get the fluoride and the chlorine out. The more high-fiber foods you eat, the better your health will be. And then get massive levels of antioxidants. Again, I mentioned berries before and whole fruit and vegetables, but I didn't mention tea. And tea is the richest source that I know of epigallocatechin gallate, EGCG, and it is the antioxidant. Other than astaxanthin, it's my favorite. Again, astaxanthin you would get from krill oil is the most likely source. Astaxanthin is a magical, magical antioxidant. It's just especially for the eyes, but the two best for the eyes and for the brain, I believe, are astaxanthin and epigallocatechin gallate. And as long as you're going to go get the epigallocatechin gallate, drink a lot of tea, especially green teas, some pu'erh's too. But get that tea into you and save your brain and save your eyes. Now, we all know what not to do, but I'm going to mention it quickly. No MSG. It's just really damages the brain and the retina. No trans fats, no pesticides, no gluten. I don't care if you're gluten intolerant or not. Stay away from gluten. It is not a good thing to put in your body. No pesticides, no heavy metals, very moderate alcohol. and absolutely no high fructose corn syrup. Go online and look at Dr. Lustig's talk. It's about an hour and a half, and it's worth every single second of your time. Again, Dr. Lustig from UCSF. I tuned in. I saw it advertised on a website, and I said, well, I'll listen to 5 minutes of it, 10 minutes of it, see what I think. I ended up watching every minute of that hour and a half, and it was astonishing, his understanding of fructose on many levels, from physiological to political. And once you watch that, you will never touch high fructose corn syrup again, nor should you. It's important to remember that about 80% of the effects, the negative effects of alcoholism, are from the high fructose corn syrup. See, at one time, the only way that we really got significant fructose in a level that was damaging was from drinking alcohol, and that's why fatty liver disease was almost completely a disease of alcoholism. Now, 25% of adolescents who are autopsied, you know, from they die, and they're done an autopsy, 25% of them have significant fatty livers already. That's from drinking high fructose corn syrup laden drinks and foods. So huge. Stay away from sugar. Now, supplements. I mentioned the herbs at the beginning, but I'm going to mention some that are really, really well proven, and I'm going to do that quickly because I don't have much time here. Now, these are the ones that have been well proven. Fish oil. Canadian study shows that it lowers APOE4 risk of causing Alzheimer's disease by 90%. 90%. Beta-carotenoids, absolutely number two. Framingham Heart Study, I believe it was, but a major study showed that it lowered risk factor of Alzheimer's disease by 50% and lowered amyloid precursor proteins. Chinese herbs, very, very effective studies showing that it lowers that. You know, we're coming to the end, and what I'm going to do is this Thursday, I'm going to go ahead and finish giving you all the things that you need to have, and I'll take a little more time going through it to finish up this talk on dementia. So, feed your brain, don't destroy your brain, be happy, be thankful, forgive, be happy. I'll talk to you on Thursday. Please call me and ask questions about brain health. God bless you. See you Thursday. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Balancing Point Radio Show with John Nieders, Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine and licensed acupuncturist. You may contact the office of John Nieders at 510-814-6900 for appointments. That's 510-814-6900. Also, go to the website www.alamedaacupuncture.com. That's www.alamedaacupuncture.com. Be sure to join John Nieders in The Balancing Point Thursday mornings, 8 a.m., right here on KEST AM 1450.